Well, I lied. I lied the last episode. I said I was going to do this episode about my favorite or the most memorable movies from this year. I started to make a list and I realized I just didn't feel like talking about it. And I didn't know what else I was going to talk about. I had an idea of something else I've been thinking about recently. And then it came to me, something that I've been stewing on for a while and decided today was the day to finally do an episode on. And that is Section 230. Something you hear about in the news all the time, Section 230, repeal, don't repeal, Section 230. But most people, including me, don't know all the details of what Section 230 is. So I decided, let me do a little bit of light research, see if I can figure something out. I knew a little bit about it, but what if I can fill in some of the other blocks and really come to a better understanding of what the debate is over and whether there's logic in it. So that's what we're going to talk about today. So in order to do this, we need to go back to 1959, Los Angeles. There was a 72-year-old man named Eliezer Smith who owned a bookstore. And one day he was arrested by the Los Angeles PD and sentenced to 30 days in jail. He was sentenced to 30 days in jail for selling a book about a lesbian that was considered obscene. And this legal fight went on over this whole thing. I think it ended up going all the way to the Supreme Court. And the ruling in the case was that he could not be held responsible for the book because he didn't write the book. He didn't create the book. He just had the book in his store and he was selling it. And he couldn't be expected to read every book before he put it on the shelf to see whether it was obscene or not. And the insinuation of this also going forward was that you were not legally responsible as a distributor until you found out that something was illegal or obscene. Then you were legally responsible to remove it. But if you didn't know up until that point, and it couldn't be proven that you didn't know, then you were not legally responsible. And that's the way that the law was until the 1990s. The 1990s were kind of the early days of the internet. The internet existed prior to that, but that's really when things started to congeal, when things started to build into communities instead of just disparate people using this new technology. More and more people were actually using the internet and email. I remember this time very well. The three big companies that you had as internet service providers were AOL, CompuServe, and Prodigy. There were others, but those were like the three big ones. And when it came to what was going on there, you had email, you had browser stuff. I don't remember, you know, like when I used AOL, I never paid for it. I always used to get the free disk. And, you know, it was like 74 hours or whatever. And I would use it. And I don't remember going on the actual web very much, looking at internets a lot. It was mostly chats. You had private chats, and then you could go in chat rooms. And chat rooms were kind of the big thing. That's where, as far as I remember, in my experience, where most of the people were. This is also where some of the biggest problems happened, because the chat rooms are really the predecessor to social media. You know, most of us don't spend our time just looking at websites. The bulk of the time we spend online, when it's not apps that are using the internet on the back end, when we're actually interfacing with the internet, most of us are spending it on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, Snapchat, TikTok. All of that happened before in chat rooms. So there was no real definition of what was legal and what wasn't legal on the internet. For the most part, everything was new, so everybody was learning. And then in 1990, there was a lawsuit by this company named Cubby Inc. And Cubby Inc. was, they were producing this, I guess the word that I've seen was forum, but I think maybe it was a chat room. They were producing something called Scuttlebutt. And Scuttlebutt was a direct competitor to something that CompuServe had, which I can't remember the name of. But the basics of the lawsuit were on CompuServe's, or in CompuServe's chat room, there was defamatory posts about Cubby's new product, Scuttlebutt. So Cubby sued CompuServe. And what ended up coming of that is it was ruled that they were not liable. CompuServe was not liable for what users were posting. That the posts that said something bad about Cubby Inc. were not made by CompuServe themselves. CompuServe was just a location where those happened. But the people who did those were just normal citizens. And they had no business connection to CompuServe. Therefore, CompuServe was not legally responsible because CompuServe was serving as a distributor and not a publisher or a creator. They didn't make the stuff that was being put up. They were just hosting it. Then again, we had another lawsuit in 1995. And this one was Stratton Oakmont versus Prodigy. And Stratton Oakmont was an investment firm. And there was a forum or chat room on Prodigy that was claiming that they had committed fraud when they had gone IPO. And so they sued Prodigy. And in this case, the court found that Prodigy performed some content moderation. So because they performed some content moderation, unlike CompuServe, who was hands-off completely, then they were legally liable for these claims. Because by moderating content, that clarified in the eyes of the law that they were closer to publisher than distributor. So then all of this led to the Telecommunications Act of 1996. And within the Telecommunications Act of 1996 is an add-on called Section 230. This act, by the way, was a bipartisan act. It was put forth by a Republican and a Democrat together. And it wasn't really, as far as I've been able to see, it wasn't a huge partisan debate that for the most part, it wasn't super controversial in 1996 from what I've seen. And what the Telecommunications Act of 1996 said was content creators are liable for what they post online, but the platforms are not liable for what those people post online. So it's going back essentially to, it's taking its cue more from Cubby Inc. versus CompuServe than from Stratton Oakmont versus Prodigy. There's also a second part of Section 230, which says that website owners or users can't be held liable for deleting or restricting access to anything they deem objectionable if those actions are taken in good faith. Anytime I see words like taken in good faith in a legal ruling or a legal document or an act like this, I cringe a little because I know that that doesn't mean anything. It has no clear defined definition, and then that's going to become a mess later. Much like the obscenity trial of Allen Ginsberg, the judge ruled that he couldn't define what was obscene, but he knew it when he saw it, which literally means nothing. So those are scary things when you see stuff. Things that are not covered under the Telecommunications Act of 1996, federal crimes. So like threatening a federal official, yeah, you're not going to be protected. Twitter's not going to be protected for leaving that up. Child pornography, yeah, they're not going to be protected for leaving that up. So they have to, by law, they have to take those things down. Intellectual property, in particular, copyright law. This is why YouTube continually has to take down things that infringe on copyright law because they're legally responsible for that. They're not protected under 230. And then anything under the Electronic Privacy Communications Act is not covered. And that is a whole bag of worms that are not the worms we're talking about. So we're not even going to touch on that. But something was added in 2018, and that was the facilitation of sex trafficking. So that has to be removed too, in order to for these companies to protect themselves legally. So then the debate begins. The debate begins, I mean, publicly. Obviously, there's been some sort of debate over this kind of stuff all along. But one of the big debate moments was when Beto O'Rourke started talking about repealing Section 230. And his problem with Section 230 is that it allowed sites like 8chan and Stormfront to post horrible, racist, and terrorist threats and content in general. And I'm not sure if he talked about this, but everybody in this whole sphere on the left that talks about 230 concerns himself with 230 because of harassment. That they feel that since these companies aren't doing enough or acting fast enough to protect people from online harassment, that it would be better if they were legally responsible for online harassment. And then you have the other side. This is a case of strange bedfellows, where the left are in agreement with the right. And that on the right, you have Donald Trump, who very much wants to have 230 repealed. And two of the reasons he wants this repealed is because he thinks that it's going to do something about his tweets being labeled as not factual, that there's debate over them, or that people don't agree that the election was not stolen from him. And he's also pissed off that a bunch of people were spreading the story of him wearing diapers, and that he mitriates himself publicly all the time. Mitriate is a nice way of saying shits himself. So he was very upset about that. So 230 is something he wanted so badly that he was willing to try to block the stimulus package and the defense funding as well. So the question is, we have a general idea now talking about this of what this covers and what it talks about. But the question is, what would happen if it was repealed? Let's reiterate a little bit. If I am Twitter and you are a Twitter user and you come onto my platform and you type something, tweet something that is illegal, that is not under one of the things that I said, you know, it's not a federal crime, it's not intellectual property, but maybe you threaten, actually, I think threatening the life of someone is something that's not covered. But you are harassing someone. Let's mix it up a little bit. Maybe you're harassing someone on the right. You're doxing them. Okay? How's that? You've doxed them. Now people, maybe this person was trying to be anonymous. You've doxed them. Now people know where they live. People are showing up at their house. Without 230, the person who does that is obviously legally responsible for the crime that they're committing. But then I, as Twitter, also become legally responsible if I'm moderating anything on my content, I mean on my platform. If I take a hands-off approach, like CompuServe, and I say 100% free speech, you can say whatever you want on here, we're not removing anything except for federal crimes, intellectual property law, Electronic Privacy Communications Act, and the facilitation of sex trafficking. Everything else stays. If I do that, then I am not legally responsible because I have not touched anything. Because without 230, remember, we're going back to 1959 ruling for Eliezer Smith that says as long as you are not acting in any way other than a distributor, you're not legally responsible. Or if I choose to moderate some of my content, then I become, under the eyes of the law, a publisher. And therefore, I am legally responsible for everything posted on my platform. I think you can see already that one of those is not going to work. There is absolutely no way that social media as we know it, or even blogging platforms, podcast hosting platforms, video hosting platforms, there are no way that they can act as publishers. Think of the amount of users they have. In order for them to avoid all legal liability as publishers, people who interact with their platform in any way and prevent any content in any way, in order to do that, they would, number one, have to remove everything risky. So everything that they could possibly get sued for, they're going to get rid of it, right? Because they don't want the legal trouble. And I hate to tell Donald Trump, but the first person whose account's going to get removed if that happens is his. Because as acting president, everything that he's said that could be considered legally responsible or lawsuit possible, they also become legally liable for. So the first thing they would do is pull him off of there. And then they would pull people from the far left. Anybody. I mean, I dare you to find an average user who hasn't said something that could possibly be used against him in a court of law in some way, some form of defamation, some form of misinformation. Now, remember, it doesn't mean that what's going on with the users is true, that they've actually violated a law. It's that as these large companies, if they were operating as publishers, then they wouldn't want anything that even moved into that direction, anything that was even considered possibly risky. So there would be a huge purge of accounts. Then the next thing would happen is everybody that was allowed to stay would have to submit everything they posted for review before it was posted. And there's no way that that can happen. These companies will go out of business. You know how many, number one, how many staff members you would have to read every possible post, every tweet that somebody wanted to post, to watch every video that they wanted to put on YouTube, to listen to every podcast that was published. I don't think it's possible. I don't even think you could hire that many people. It'd be great if that many people were employed. But then also the problem here is it's going to slow things down considerably, right? You know, we tweet, boom, it's done, it's off. That's the addicting thing about social media. Boom, take a picture, post it. But imagine if you had to submit it and it didn't go up for like 12 to 24 hours. That dopamine hit that drives everybody back to social media would be gone. So everything would drop. And as everything dropped, so would all the advertising. And so would all the profits. So therefore, they wouldn't even have the money to pay for all these people to moderate content. As things stand now, they have problems moderating content. But if they had to moderate every single post, no. So that, if you repealed 230 social media, if they decided in any way to touch their content, they would all go out of business. That includes Rumble, Parler, you know, all these far right social medias where everybody's concerned with free speech. They would never be able to touch anything. But maybe that's what people want, right? So what would it be like if everything went the other way? What if everybody just went hands off? Well, I can tell you a little bit about it because I lived through it. I lived through the AOL CompuServe Prodigy times. I lived through MySpace. It's the Wild West. Anything goes, which is very good for free speech, both good and bad free speech. But then you have problems. You have parents that are upset that pictures of boobs and dicks are sent to their underage children. They're pictures of adults, therefore not child pornography. Therefore, it's not illegal, technically. You're just posting it. You're not actually, see, parents might think you're sending it directly to them, but you're just posting it publicly. And because these platforms, in order to not be legally responsible, have to keep their hands out of everything, they can't do anything. And anybody harassed, you know, somebody harassing your wife, somebody harassing your children, somebody harassing public officials, no protections. You just have to eat it up or quit. So there'd be a lot of people that wouldn't be able to live through that. that can't stand that, that wouldn't be able to put up the, you know, the first thing that parents would do is be pull their children off of it. You know that. And they wouldn't be wrong. If there's no protections for them, why would you trust them to be on it on their own? Or at all, for that matter. So then your user numbers are going down. And your user numbers go down, advertising goes down, revenue goes down. I don't think they'd all go out of business, like the other scenario, if they act as publishers, but a lot of them would. And maybe in the end, they all would. Because if you're an advertiser, let's imagine the Facebook feed with no protections, with 100% free speech. If you are Sprite, do you want your advertisement to show up in a feed that might be next to a post that says the N-word? Do you want your post to show up next to a Nazi flag? On the other end of it, if you are a preacher and you're posting on Facebook about Sunday services, do you want your post to possibly be next to advertisement for a lesbian orgy? Or maybe just a giant picture of the devil? Because with no moderation, all of that's possible. So as an advertiser, you're probably going to go back to billboards, television, radio. So things are going to dry up there too. I mean, from what I see, 230 is not perfect. But it does strike an uncomfortable balance. And there are ways that we can learn new ways to make this work better, to prevent the bad parts that are happening for everyone. But repealing it, you only have two choices of what happens when you repeal it. And both are worse than what we have now. So this is my opinion, but I think that it's laid out pretty clear there what would happen in both cases. Maybe somebody wants those, but that would only be somebody who really just doesn't want social media at all. But it's not just social media that this would apply to. Once again, this is going to apply to video. So YouTube's gone. It's going to apply to podcasts. This would be gone probably. It's going to apply to maybe even text messages. It certainly could apply to iMessage because iMessage doesn't go through the carrier. It goes through internet. It goes through its own network. So it could very well apply to that, and it may even apply to email. What happens if Google is responsible for what people email each other? I don't have an answer. You know, what do you do to fix the problems? I don't know. But certainly repealing seems to be the wrong thing. Fixing. But I do think it's funny that the people who are pushing hardest for it to be repealed would be some of the people that were hurt the most by the consequences of it being repealed. I'm going to read you a passage from Tim Wu's book, The Attention Merchants. And this is a section, there's a nice section in this book about the CompuServe AOL Prodigy days. And this is from that section. Later, when his chat rooms took off, Prodigy became concerned that the wild, unpoliced forums might discourage advertisers and damage the company's family-friendly image. They therefore decided to ban profanity and other offensive speech, as well as any chats that reflected negatively on Prodigy's owners or advertisers. Later, it banned flame wars, those extended bouts of troll against troll among members. Eventually, postings even mentioning other members by name were forbidden. By then, every message was being examined for potential infractions. So my imagining of what would happen if they were to act as publishers is based on what happened previously. And what I think is particularly scary about this is the escalation. First, they started with, well, let's just police this a little bit. And then it's like, well, nobody can curse anymore. And then it goes to, like, don't even talk about other people. Then it becomes ridiculous. Like, why even use it? That last sentence, though. By then, every message was being examined for potential infractions. Every message. And they had a fraction of the users that one social media site has now. So those are my thoughts on 230. That's my thoughts, my research. I could be flawed here. You know, I didn't write the book on 230. I certainly didn't go to the law library. This is just from Tim Wu's book, from Los Angeles Times, from The Verge, from multiple sources of just what they all had to say about 230 and pulling it all together and seeing what it meant. I don't claim credit for any of the research here. I only claim credit for me trying to find some logic in what could happen if it was repealed. Could be this or this. And what would this look like? And what would this look like? Those are my thoughts. Everything else was served to me by other people. So if you would, if you liked this kind of episode, then I'm going to recommend from the archives that you go check out episode 33, where I talk about copyright law and what's broken about copyright law. Actually, the episode is called Copyright is Broken. So go check that out. I'll put a link in the description. And if you want to support this show, you can support me being here pretty much every day. I've been here every day for a while. I say pretty much because I'm not promising every day. I'm just doing it because I love it. But if you want to support this, support the work that it takes to prepare these episodes, the time that it takes to record it, and the work that it takes afterwards to edit and prepare everything, then please, I welcome you to become a patron and support what I'm doing. And I've just rethought Patreon today, and I didn't know that I could actually change it from specific tier prices to setting one tier where everybody could pay what they want. That when you go in now, you will only see one tier option in Patreon. It will say $1. If you click on that, you can put in whatever price you want. Some people can't afford much. It's hard times right now. 2020 has been hard. It's been rough for me. I know. Maybe you want to help, but you can't do a lot. Well, you can set the price that you can do. And maybe, you know, some people were in industries that did really well this year. And maybe you're doing well and you want to support the show and you want to do more. Well, please, you can do that. Set whatever price you want. Just click that, change the price. Whatever you contribute, that's more, helps the people who are unable to do as much. So it all balances out. We all take care of each other. You guys are taking care of me, and I'm here providing the content. So patreon.com/Chad Hall. Check it out today. Join. Let's start a community there. I'm going to say it again. I really want to use Discord. I like it. I would rather stop posting on my social medias and post stuff on Discord with a group. So let's try to make that happen. And if you want, you can go over to the Lend a Hand page on my website and check out the 9 other ways that you can help support this podcast in addition to Patreon. One of those ways is something really simple. Share an episode. Share it with a friend. Share it on social media. Share this episode right now. And if you're listening in on Overcast, hit the star. All right. I'm still building on what I said the other day. I'm still learning to be comfortable. I have to keep reminding myself, I do work and what I do has value. There's nothing wrong with that. Oh, that reminds me. I told you guys this before. This is a lot of after stuff, but I've been using Podpages. I really like Podpages. I'm probably going to take them on as an affiliate sponsor of this show. They're basically what it is. I'll give you a little brief little thing so you know what I'm talking about. You put in your podcast RSS feed and it creates a website for you with a section for reviews, pulls in reviews from Apple. It gives you pages for each episode. It gives you blog. The amount of features this thing gives you. I've gone premium today or pro because I like it that much. And one of the features that's on there is voicemail. So if I ever ask a question on here and you don't want to tweet me or whatever, you can go to the website, which right now I can't give you the URL because the custom domain that I bought is not active yet. But if you use the link in the description and go to the website, then you can click the little blue microphone on the bottom right hand and leave a voicemail. And I can hear your voice. You can actually talk to me, which is super cool. Okay, that's all I've got. I'll talk to you guys when I'm back. Maybe tomorrow. Maybe. We'll see. Bye.